Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comment. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter. And that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. We have another great show in store for you today. So let's take a look at what's on tap with Liberty and Justice for All. Trayvon Martin, now Jordan Davis. Is this another stand your ground gone badly? Is it the law or is it the people in Florida? We also take a look at My Brother's Keeper. President Obama's new initiative focused on young African Americans, as well as something that Eric Holder is doing, and we talked about this a few weeks ago. But this guy, to me, is exciting. He's really looking out for the people, and he's actually pushing for felons to be restored their voting rights, and we talk about much, much more. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And, of course, joining me in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events, as well as the chief operating officer for Cook Enterprises. Now you can follow her on Twitter, and that's at AskJema. That's AskJema. AskJema. I introduce the some and present the others. No other than Jema Hill Cook. Jema, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, first, let me start by saying this. I'm going to digress here for a moment. And I want to say, I don't recognize America anymore. What do I mean by that? Well, essentially this. When I look at the math and science scores, in particular, Washington Post reported that on the math portion, 29 countries tested better than the United States, aside from the Asia powerhouses of Shanghai, Singapore, Hong Kong, Korea, and Japan. The United States was outscored by European countries, including Britain, Poland, France, Germany, and Slovenia. Also, a young man, I'm not going to mention his name, went out and tried to expose an institution, Urban League, trying to tear down the healthcare system as opposed to helping provide opportunities or better yet making suggestions for improvement. Not to mention we have some legislators making efforts to change voter ID laws akin to what was known as the Black Codes or Jim Crow days. If we look at the criminal justice system and the last two verdicts handed down in the state of Florida for killing young, unarmed black men, it makes me wonder if Lady Justice scales are tilted unfavorably against African Americans in this country. Our nation's economy is not better. If we look at the numbers cited by Reuters, the top 1% alone own 46% of all global assets. That is almost half. Staggering. So the state of our union is unfamiliar to me. So, Jima, my first question is to you, what is happening to America?
Well, let me say this. The sad part is that what you mentioned isn't really new information. We, as it relates to the criminal justice system, people of color, specifically young men of color, have been brutally murdered and crimes unsolved for years. We often talk about how when a white child, girl child, goes missing, we know about it and we hear about it and Amber Alerts and things go out, and yet it seems like it takes people daggum near chaining themselves to a building to get the same kind of coverage on a missing child of color. And so that's been going on. You go back as far as the brutal death of Emmett Till to Megan Evers in his driveway, to the countless men and women whose bodies lay murdered for no other reason than for the color of their skin. And you fast forward to 2014, and you want to say, wow, what's happening? But what you really should be saying is, how have we allowed this to go on for so long? And when we fail to participate in the political process in its entirety, then we have to own some of the responsibility. When we allow business people, corporate-minded people, bottom line, more concerned about the value of the dollar than they are with the value of educating our students, when we allow those people to become part of our school board, to become superintendents in our schools, to become members of our different state education bodies, when we allow those types of people access to making the decisions, we have the education system that we have. So when we fail to participate in the process on a local level and we do not show up for jury duty and we fail to vote for our local judges and county commissioners and mayors and city council and school board, when we fail to do that, then we have created the system that we are now so angry with. But we had a part to play in it because we sat down for too long. We were distracted by something, and it could be a number of things that distracted us, but we were distracted. And I say we collectively, as a body of people, as a nation, as a country, we allowed ourselves to be distracted, and so we lost the desire to participate in the process. And because of that, we have what we have. So we know how to fix it. It's really not hard to fix. It's easy to fix. Just, you know, participate. Show up when it's time to vote, even like right now in primary elections going on all across the United States of this great of America. There are judges being elected. There are city council people. There are state legislators being in primary seasons right now. We need to know what they stand for, and then we need to go and vote, because those are the people that have had access to creating this life that we're in now, and we're trying to figure out how the hell we get here. So that's America.
So basically what I hear is that we become bystanders. No longer can we sit on the sideline and, just be spectators. We need to actually be participating, is what I'm hearing. And what's interesting is that that has not been a part of our culture. Even if you look at, and this is Black History Month, and we're going to have a moment of Black history later, but if you look at the history of slavery and how, you know, people stood up and they fought back, if you bring forward past the Black codes and Jim Crow and you start looking at the Civil Rights Movement, people, you know, they organize and they move forward. So if you look at the history of African Americans, specifically in this country, that has not been our forte. So what has changed that has allowed us to succumb to the things that I mentioned? You know, the healthcare issue, the Jim Crow days now coming back with them changing voter ID laws, math and science scores, and, you know, the economics in the justice system. Why are we sitting on the sidelines spectating?
For the very reason that we became distracted. And by that I mean there was something bright that was shining, and we kept looking towards that, and we negated to look at what was going on around us. So when separate and unequal was dealt with Brown versus the Board of Education, the goal was not just to have us all go to school together. It was that we all go to school together and we had equal access. And so you had people that was part of the board that made sure things were going to be fair and equitable across the board. And so what happened was a generation came in the time when things appeared to be easy, that you were not discriminating against me openly, because that was against the law. So there, you found other ways to lock me out. You found other ways to keep me forever being a consumer and not one that had any value in terms of owning things. And then we forgot what it meant. Assimilation never meant, and integration never meant, you forgot where you came from. That was never the intent. The intent was for us to have equal access and for the playing field to be level. It didn't mean that all of a sudden that now I go to school with you or I have access to you that now I forget everything I was taught. But for some reason, that's what happened. We were lulled into a sleep by the bright lights and the bigger house and being the only one in the room. You know, we became drunk with our own false sense of power. So if I was the attorney on record for a major corporation, then I had done that. And I had no allegiance to any organization that made it possible. Reverend Al often talks about the person that says to him, about his resume. It was his resume that got him the job. And Reverend Al says, but it's civil rights that got them to look at your resume. So, you know, yeah, you may have had everything you needed to get in the room, but had these things not happened before you, you wouldn't have got in the room. There's a lot of people that had that could have done it and wasn't given the opportunity to do. I think in the midst of all of the first and the being a part of, and finally, I guess, I don't know, feeling like we were finally going to be treated like true Americans, forgot about who we were and what sustained us through the Middle Passage. You know, there was a lot of us that didn't make it. And so we have to talk about that. And that's what we don't do. We don't talk about how we got here. We just talk. We celebrate the day. We celebrate the act, the day the civil rights was signed, and what happened on the Pettus Bridge and Black Sunday and the boycott. But we don't talk about what led up to the boycott. We don't talk about what happened during the boycott and the different times they met. And the give and take of the struggle and the people taking their, you know, really not getting on buses for a year. And at the end of the day, it really wasn't about them letting us on. They were starting to lose money. And what we failed to realize, the value of our dollar. Our dollar is just as valuable as anybody else's. And we have allowed them to devalue not only our life, but our dollar.
Okay, that's interesting.
If we were to use the same principles and the same strategies, because they had strategies back when they boycotted, that's mm-hmm. the strategy of that. And if we were to use some of those same strategies today to get done, I mean, we have way too many ways of organizing. These people didn't have cell phones and pagers. Some of them didn't have phones in their homes. But they knew where to meet, and they knew what to do when they got there. So if we could just have that, the strategy of it and the spirit of it, then we could really have an impact on some of these unjust laws and some of these practices that are happening every day.
Okay, so let's unpack that for a second, especially the unjust laws piece and the devaluation of our lives. It's in the backdrop of the civil rights activity just happened over the weekend, and specifically Michael Dunn's mistrial. Now, I want to read for you and listen to the audience out there about an article that was in The Root about what happened. And I want to kind of discuss this stand your ground law. I want to look really at the law, but I want to also look at the people that's actually in these courtrooms that is trying to interpret the law. Now, the article says, the shooting of a 17-year-old Jordan Davis marked yet another tragic and senseless death of an unarmed, innocent African-American teenager. Rather than seeing Jordan as his friends or what they were, ordinary teenagers, Mr. Dunn saw a threat and a reckless act with lethal force, and recklessly acted with lethal force. Now, the verdict in Mr. Dunn's trial does not change the fact that the same pernicious biases and stereotypes about race and dangerousness that led to Trayvon Martin's death played a central role in Jordan's death. So when we look at the stand your ground law and then look at the fact that he was actually convicted on three counts of a few counts of attempted murder and was not found guilty, or was actually found a mistrial on a murder, really. How is it the case that you can actually find an individual innocent on attempted murder and a person dies and you have a mistrial on murder? I don't understand that. Help me unpack that a little bit.
That's difficult. And I think that in Twitterverse last night and even some today, that has been the biggest unanswered question is, how is that possible? How can they find you guilty on attempted, but not guilty on what you actually did do?
A life was lost in this particular
right.
instance. There's proof of that, and they already proved
right.
that they found him guilty of attempted murder. So then you could conclude, you know, that if you murder somebody, then that's actually you actually going through with the act. So it's bewildering to me that they would a jury would come back in that fashion. That's why I'm asking the question: is it something about the culture of Florida that would? I mean, because people around the world seem to understand this, but the people of Florida don't get it. So is it something going on in the culture of Florida, or the minds of the people of Florida? Is it the perception of the people of Florida with respect to how they view African Americans in that part of the nation? Or is it the law? What do you think it is in this particular instance?
I think it's the law, and I think the law is not, unfortunately, Florida isn't the only state. You have 23 other states that have a stand your ground. State of Texas has a stand your ground law.
But they don't have these type of issues, though. I mean, even though these laws are on the books in these other states, it seems to be that Florida is the state that's having the most problems with the interpretation of the law. I mean, even
and
when
I don't
you look
necessarily,
at,
I don't necessarily know if that's true, because had not, you know, people when Trayvon Martin's thing kicked off, those people in Sanford said he wasn't the first child to have been shot, and the defense was paying your ground. He wasn't the first one. He was the first one that the family said, no, we're not just going to take that. So it wasn't like it hadn't happened already in Florida. We just didn't know about it because there was no big deal made about it. Because you get to a point, you live somewhere, the people down there on the news were saying during that time, this happens all the time. So, you know, nobody made a big fuss about it because this is just what we're used to seeing down here. Now, that's the sad part about it. The sad part about, and it's the same thing in the black community when you have violence in the community in itself where, oh, we expect people to shoot people. But I don't have the expectation. I don't have the expectation that people are not going to be held accountable when they break the law. My expectation is for the law to come in and do what it is to do what they're supposed to do. I don't care who did the shoot. But for some reason, We get in our mind, oh, they gonna get off, so why even bother? So when you look at the law and how the law is written and how the law is interpreted and how the prosecutors, in my opinion, have failed on both of these high profile cases to present a case that would not leave the jury wondering about what to do, because their case would be so airtight that the jury would have to find, you know, the person guilty. So you have the law, you have the interpretation of the law, you have people in Florida, you have the prosecutors. So you have all of that. You know, it's not one or, it's either and, it's both.
Yeah, but the jury is splitting verbs, though. I mean, you know, they trying to do this and trying to do that. I mean, the dude he shot into the car. He killed a guy. I mean, and if you find him guilty of attempted murder, how do you not find him guilty of murder? I mean, I hear you, and I understand that the prosecution, you know, bears the burden of trying to prove that this guy did this, but it also is in the hands of the jury, too. This is two juries in the state of Florida that come back rendering these people, you know, not guilty of taking a black life. And when the situation is reversed, I'm looking at, you know, the case of Marissa Alexander. You know, she was a Florida woman waiting a new trial on stand your ground because she shot in the house for her husband that was known to be her. She really felt threatened, and she didn't get a chance to exercise her right to use stand your ground when her life was really in danger, when there has been violence enacted against her in the past. So, and need I not say that Marissa Alexander is an African-American female? So how is it the law is the same, the state is the same, but the jury finds the young, the non-African-Americans not guilty or come back with a mistrial and then find the African-Americans guilty? To me, it doesn't give me enough to make sense, logical sense out of the case.
Right, and that's where we sit right now. It's not logical. It doesn't. We definitely know it's not fair. We definitely know it's not justice for the family. in either one of these cases. And so we, so what about all of that can we truly address? So what we can truly address is the law itself, that the law needs to be either stricken down or things in it need to be clarified to a point that it is easier to interpret for the layperson that's in that jury box than making it more difficult. And so if that's going to be the starting point, the strategy of staying your ground and either redefining it, dismantling it, or making it, you know, a lot more clear so that when it is used as a defense, it is used as a defense that will render a fair verdict. And so far, in the three that you've mentioned, it has not rendered a fair verdict. Not for Ms. Marissa, not for Trayvon, not for Jordan. It has not rendered a fair verdict. And so, and there's data out there. I mean, I'm not just talking out the side of my neck. There is actually some raw data that shows that when standing your ground and the defendant is an African-American, chances are, he'll be found guilty. And when the defendant who's using standing your ground is white, chances are he won't be found guilty. There's actual data down there to support that. Go find it. If you don't, go look it up. It's out there.
How do we make inroads into a system that is obviously stacked against blacks? Right. I mean, there's so much data out there, and we don't have to go no further than look at Eric Holder's initiative to all the things he's talked about with releasing a disproportionate amount of African Americans with drug cases. You look at the fact that he's trying to restore felons' voting rights, all the things associated. There's a lot of data out there. So how do we make inroads, and how do we, as the people, find ways to help make the system fair, to move the system along one step further? Because right now, to me, it seems like we're taking steps backwards in our criminal justice system. You know, we make advancements in one area, and then we make, and we go back in other areas. How do we make those advancements?
Well, and it goes back to what we said at the top of the show, and that's being a part of the process. And that's because all of these laws are state laws, which means your local state representatives that are in your capital cities are the ones that made these laws. And so those are the people who you need to get rid of first, is the people in your state legislators that are writing these laws and passing these laws. So if you don't have the right people representing you, this is what you get. And so when it comes to voting for your state representatives and your state senators, your governor, because the governor now signs these crazy laws, then this is what you get. And so if we fail to participate in the process, and when we're called to jury duty, and if we're not registered, chances are you're not going to get that call for jury duty. So all these things go hand in hand. So you need to be registered to vote. You need to accept the notice when it comes. You need to make sure you're voting in your local election, and you need to know what's on the docket. I mean, every state has a local channel that shows you what's happening in your state legislature. Every state has it. So, that you have to do something as well. And it's just not about somebody else coming to tell you what's going on. You got to do your own due diligence and get up and as the president said a couple of years ago, they ruffle some feathers and, get out your house shoes and your house coat and go do something. Or if you're at home in your house shoes and your house coat and you're on the Internet, get off of Facebook, get off of Twitter, and go Google what's happening in your state.
Yeah. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to go to the phone lines real quick. Hello, you're on Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name, where you're calling from.
Mr. Cook, this is Reverend Darrell from Georgia. How you doing, sir?
Hey, Reverend Darrell, how are you?
I'm doing okay.
Yeah, but what's your comment?
Yeah, I just listening in on the conversation, and honestly, I haven't watched a lot of TV in the past, I don't know, year or so, but so I'm not real familiar with what's, you know, went on with this case, but just from what I, the little bit that I've heard, I'm agreeing with the lady that, and with, and what you're saying, there does seem to be, the only way I know to put it is some unfairness towards African Americans through our justice system, and it's disturbing, obviously, and I guess, you know, people like myself that care but don't seem to really know what to do. What do you suggest that I could do, or that other people could do? And by the way, I want to appreciate you for continuing your show and all that you do. Brother Cut.
Well, you know, I really appreciate that, Renfrey. I mean, it means a lot to me to be able to provide this service to the community, and it takes good people like you that listen in and provide a voice, to give a voice to the community. To answer your question, you know, I really believe that, you know, in my judgment, we need to close the gap between the police officers and the community. It shouldn't be an instance where police are called to a community only when there's a problem. They should be volunteering in communities. They should be showing up at community centers. They should be a part of the local church. They should be a part of the local school system. They should be members of the community. And when you have that, and you now become a member of that community, you now have a strong affinity for that people, whether they're white, black, red, or green. You know that individual on a personal level. And see, in my estimation, what's happening is that, you know, we have a situation where the people that are being charged, i.e. the African Americans, and the people that are providing, you know, that are actually participating in judging them, don't know them. And so the assumptions that they're making are based on these prejudged characteristics of individuals that they know nothing about. And so anytime that you have ignorance about a particular people, you're going to always prejudge, and you're going to come to conclusions that are wrong. Now, I would have to lean on my cohort here with her psychology and her background and sociology background to provide more insight. But, Reverend Farrell, that's the way I see it. Gina, what's your position?
I agree with what you're saying, and I think the other thing that we all can do is just check our own levels of biases and the things that we say and do that we might not even know we're saying and doing, or that might be offensive to one another, and then just be open to the idea of change and possibility and hope and opportunity. I think when we begin to see that we all want a more perfect union, and by that I mean we want America to be as great as she can be, and she will only be that if we are as good as we can be. And so if I am part of your world in even some small scale, even if your entire community it looks just like you, but somewhere along the day you cross paths with somebody that don't look like you, then we have to go out of our way to make everybody feel comfortable and everybody feel a part of. And when we see an injustice or we hear of injustice, and I believe the caller said he was from Georgia, we know there's a lot going on in Georgia, you know, as well. And so, you know, recognizing in your own area, you know, being active and making sure that your city council people and your mayor and school board people are doing what you know is in the best interest of the entire body and not just a select few. Because I think we sometimes get in our own little world and that's all we're concerned about. And we say, well, that's not happening in my school, so I really don't care about it. But But if they allow it to happen in one, then you can best believe they will allow it to happen in another, and eventually it will get to your school. And so we have to be mindful of what we allow to happen in one place, then, you know, then we're giving them the green light to let it happen somewhere else. And so if we take a look at everything and make sure it's in the best interest of your area, you start on your block, you start in your home, you start in your community, then you start in your neighborhood, and then you start in your city. And then, if everything you do is to make something better, then if we all do that, then America will be what she has been destined to be.
So, Rafael, what's your position on this issue?
I hear what she is saying, and I agree with her. And it's been a while since I've talked to you, Brother Cook. I don't know if you remember me or not. I was with Petra for a while back. Anyway, and you know, with the child abuse awareness and all that I've been trying to stay with, that's one of been one of my big things is focusing on the community, trying to get the community involved. And it's not a real easy task, but it's worth the effort. And I think by doing this, and my big idea about the community is getting, you know, representatives from all of our churches and from our local mosque and from the police department, and to all to come together and sit down and say, well, let's look and focus at the problems, you know, without being critical of anybody for their religion or whatever. Let's sit down as a people, right, and focus on the needs of our children in this community, which are safety, which is, you know, education, hunger, and all those things. And that's kind of encouraging to hear your psychiatrist there, you know, to put that note in. It kind of, you know, gives me kind of an idea of a little something to add there. But I just wish more people would get involved in the communities. You know, that's where things start.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, we really have to begin by just opening up a dialogue, just having to communicate, you know, communicating with each other. And then, you know, as we build these relationships, it becomes a lot easier for us to move forward with an agenda. But I think the first step is just talking to each other, getting to know each other, participate in the community, show up. Show up and just volunteer, show up and be a part, you know, and especially when it comes to our law enforcement. They should not only be in the community when problems occur. They should be there in the good times and in the bad times to establish, you know, authority as well as support for anything that's going on in a local community.
Right.
We're going to take a quick break, real quick, Ram Farron, and when we come back, we're gonna continue the conversation. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be back in a moment.
Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com. and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jema. And Ask Jema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my East Coast friend.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We also have a chat room out there, and you can also get with us on Facebook at Current Events with Patrick Cook. Okay, just before the break, Reverend Farrell, you had a comment. You want to finish that comment?
Yes, sir. Going back to I would say my high school years, I learned early on that there were certain things that you could say and not mean to offend people of, you know, different races or different religions or whatever. And instead, I was just the type of person, instead of being offended by that, I won't, you know, or defensive, should I say, I would want to understand, you know, because people are people. That's the way I see it. And one thing that I learned in the area where I live, at least, is that that most of the African Americans here don't want you even to bring up the issue of black and white. You know, they like for me, for instance, to allow them to bring that issue up, and they do it in a very, you know, good and kind manner. And that has worked out really well for me, you know, because throughout my, you know, working career, I worked mostly with African-Americans, and I've always had a great rapport with them. And I don't see it as us and them. I see it as us, you know, together, one group, one family. But I guess what I'm saying is being sensitive and knowing that person that's, you know, getting offended for a certain reason, there's a reason for that. Or that's shying away, there's a reason for that. Just be kind to people and try to understand people.
That's an excellent point. You know, I think in my estimation, Jim, I'm going to let you really weigh in here, but in my estimation, we've really not had a real conversation around race. It's almost like we're in a battered syndrome. We know that it happened, but no one's talking about it. We kind of have these sidebar conversations, and we don't address the issue head on. So when you have these smaller conversations about it and don't raise the conversation to a national level. And, you know, some of the things we may say when we had a conversation may be offensive. It may hurt some people. But to get it out, to get it out and to get it behind us, I think that needs to happen. And it not just the conversation, but, you know, and Jim, this is just the therapist piece. I'll let you have that particular, but I want you to weigh in here, is that when you have a situation like that and you go in, you want to kind of get as much of it out, and open, and then you can decompress. But right now, we're not in a position, in my estimation, nationally, to really decompress because the pressure continues to build every year, and it really resurfaces when you have a case like what we just had with Martin here, with the situation with it happened in Florida. So when you have a case that happened with Jordan Davis, and it kind of raises that pressure again. Jima, what do you think about Reverend Farrell's comments here?
Well, you go back to anyone that has ever gone through any sort of counseling, or even if you just watch G.I. Joe. G.I. Joe often says, knowing is half the battle. And we as a country in our totality have failed to have a conversation about race that is not in reaction to a racial incident. If we can have the conversation not in reaction to a racial incident, then we could probably have a real conversation. But because it always comes on the heels of something having just happened, then we're dealing with all the emotions behind it. And when you're dealing with people's emotions, they vary from day to day, second to second. And so we've got to have a real conversation devoid of emotion. And we have to have a real conversation about what do we mean by race, and that there is a racial problem. What do we mean by that? And we have to come up with a working definition. I mean, we have, for as many people we have in America today, we have that many definitions of racism. We have that many different definitions of what is a racial problem or whatever. And so we've never come to an agreement about what race is and what the race problem is in America, because we never talk about it outside of a racial incident. So that's the first thing we have to do, is that we have to admit we have a problem. And if we fail to admit that we have a problem, then everything we do will just be a Band-Aid. For the alcoholic who goes to treatment because this is his third DUI, and he's been ordered to go to court, go to therapy because of the court saying so. When he's done with that, chances are he's going to continue to drink because he still doesn't think he has a problem. So until he admits he has a problem, he can go to therapy for the rest of his life and will still be an alcoholic and a drinking alcoholic until he says, I don't want to drink anymore. So until America says, I don't want to be prejudiced, I don't want to be discriminatory, I don't want to be hateful, I don't want to be that way, until we say that, then this is what we're going to get. Because some want to say racism doesn't exist. And I don't know how anybody can say that in the 21st century. Your author says the problem of the 20th century would be the problem of the color line. And here we are in the 21st century, and it's even worse now, because people have failed to really say, okay, this happened, and I'm sorry it happened. How can we move on? And unfortunately, what we have to do as African Americans is accept the fact that America in her totality will probably never apologize to us for slavery. We'll probably never apologize. We'll probably never ask us to forgive for what happened during slavery. We still have to say, okay, now what are we going to do? We still have to forgive, even if America never says it. Even if we keep trying to play like it wasn't, you know, you have politicians, slavery wasn't that bad. You know, so you have all of these things happening in the wake of a Trayvon Martin, in the wake of a Marissa Alexander, in the wake of Oscar Grant in California on the subway, in the wake of Sean Bell getting shot at his bachelor party. You have these, I mean, in the wake of Chicago in the summertime. You have all this going on. And so how do we have the conversation devoid of overly emotionalizing it? We've got to figure out a way to just say what is and what isn't. And then say, now what are we going to do about it? Because now we know that the law is unjust. We know that the Stand Your Ground law is unjust. So what are we going to do about that? Then if it's unjust in Florida, it's unjust in Georgia, it's unjust in Texas, it's an unjust law. So how do we tackle laws that have been unjust in the past? Brown versus Topeka Board of Education was about an unjust law. What did Thurgood Marshall do? What did the NAACP do? What did SCLC do? They strategized, and they came up with a plan of action to address the unjust law. So that's what we have to do now, is mm-hmm. address the unjust law. And what wow. part of it is unjust? And then how do we, and then get on the ground to make it happen. And you will have to put pressure on those people that are making the unjust law. Either you do this or you're not going to be there. It's real simple. Because just like you got voted in, you can be voted out.
Yeah, I just want to add
and
one,
that's
you know,
what
one,
we
one
have
comment.
To do.
You know, you mentioned about the apology. You know, just for clarity, when we talk about this apology, we mean holistically, because, you know, a few years ago, President Clinton in the, I think I want to say the 110th Congress, maybe, they did pass a resolution, and it's entitled Apologizing for the Enslavement of Racial Segregation in African Americans, and it does mention, whereas an apology for centuries of brutal dehumanization and injustice cannot erase the past, but confession of the wrongs committed can speed racial healing and reconciliation and help Americans confront the ghosts of their past. But this was not raised to a position that was really brought to fruition to do something about it. You know, it's almost passing, you know, I apologize and keep it moving. Your comments, Rev. Farrell.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I do feel like, from the bottom of my heart, that I owe the African-American community, this country, an apology personally, because I don't feel like I've done enough to step in and help stop a lot of what's going on, you know? And I truly am deeply hurt of all the... you know, the slavery and all the horrible things that have happened to our blacks in America and to the Indians. And it's just, on a personal level, I have no problems saying that I know that it was wrong and I apologize personally.
That's absolutely wonderful. I mean, that is the first step, right? You do this, you know, by the ones, and the ones turns into tens, and the tens turns into hundreds, and the hundreds turns into thousands, and so forth. But that is the first step. And you know, and from the bottom of my heart, I can appreciate a person coming out saying that, and I can feel the sincerity in your words and in your heart when you say that. And I can say, you know, personally, I can appreciate that. But not only... you know, African Americans need to apologize to themselves for allowing the perpetuation of a lot of the negativity that we see in our communities as well. So it's not just coming from, you know, one race, but it's coming from within and without. So we have a kind of a double-edged sword here that we're dealing with. And I think as we move forward, we'll definitely begin to heal. Jimmy, you say what?
I agree with that. And I think, you know, as I stated, you have to admit that you have a problem yourself in order for you to then want to change something about what you're doing. And so until we take that first step, which is our first step is initially the one we take for ourselves, then we take one with the community, and then on a national level, then we can have a real conversation about race and about what it means to be black in America, white in America. What is white privilege? What does that mean? You know, what does it mean to be, you know, Hispanic in America or whatever it means? And should it mean, what does it mean to be gay, straight? What does all that mean? How does all that play into the fabric of who we are as people? Because I am more than what you see. You see me and you see a black female, but I'm more than that. That's not just who I am. It's a part of who I am, but I'm more than that. I'm a mother. I'm a daughter. I'm a sister. I'm an aunt. You know, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm all sorts of things. I'm highly intelligent.
Right.
I consider myself to be gorgeous and beautiful. I mean, whether you agree or not, that's how I see myself. So at the end of the day, until we have the conversation where you get to know who I am, then the only thing you will have, your only interaction with me will be based on what you see, and you see I'm black and you see I'm a female, and then you decide on how you're going to respond to me. And there's more to me than that. And so we have to begin to look at each other for more than just the first thing we see, and have the hard conversation or have the easy conversation. You know, race doesn't have to be a difficult conversation, but it's difficult because we don't want to talk about it. You know, if you go to the doctor and your blood pressure continues to be high, at some point your doctor's going to tell you you need some medicine, or he's going to tell you you need to lose some weight. He's going to give you some sort of prescription to help you take care of that. It's going to be up to you whether or not you take the medicine and whether or not you lose the weight, but he's giving you what it is you need to do, and that's where we are. We've had too many cases in just the last 5 years that have dealt with race on some level. You go back to what happened with Skip Gates at his home being arrested, and the need to have the beer summit with the president and the police and vice president all out there talking because race came up during that period. And that was just 2008 because it was during the, you know, first election. And so here we are 6 years later, and we haven't, and we still haven't had that real conversation about race. We have it after an event. I want us to have it when nothing has happened, when emotions are down and we can really get to the nitty-gritty. That's when I want us to have the conversation.
All right. So it's time for our top of the hour break, and we're going to take a break. I'm going to shift the conversation when we return. President Obama is starting this new initiative called My Brother's Keeper. We're going to talk about that when we return on the other side of the break. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gina, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, And I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And, of course, my
stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. At the Winter Olympics in Sochi, ice dancing duo Merrill Davis and Charlie White are leading after the short program. NPR's Tamara Keith reports their closest competitors are 2.5 points behind.
Davis and White have been skating together for 17 years, and as White said at a post-performance press conference, having each other helped with the Olympic jitters.
You know, we've been through so much together and life and in competitions and everything that, you know, when we took the ice out there, I think we just felt calm being out there together.
White and Davis won silver at the Olympics in Vancouver 4 years ago. The ice dancers who got gold that year, Tessa Virtue and Scott Moyer from Canada, are in second place here in Sochi after the short program. These two teams actually train with the same coach. And although their rivalry is strong, they say no one understands what they're going through better. Tamara Keith, NPR News, Sochi.
Anti-government demonstrators in Ukraine have withdrawn from a key government building in the capital city, Kiev, ending a nearly three-month occupation. NPR's Corey Flintoff reports the protesters have vowed to retake the building if their demands aren't met.
The demonstrators withdrew from the Kiev City Hall in return for a promise that all charges would be dropped against protesters who were arrested during the crisis. Hundreds of protesters remained outside the building, saying they're prepared to reoccupy it if the government fails to keep its promise, and tens of thousands of protesters massed in Kiev Central Square to show their opposition to President Viktor Yanukovych, who's backed away from promised economic and political reforms. Yanukovych has instead aligned his government with Russia. Corey Flintoff, NPR News.
In Egypt, a blast has ripped through a bus carrying tourists near the Israeli border. At least 4 people are dead and 27 are injured. NPR's Leah Fadel reports.
State television reports the blast detonated less than 2 miles from the busiest border crossing with Israel in southern Sinai. The area, Taba, is a tourist destination and frequented by travelers from all over the world. So far, no one has claimed responsibility for the blast. It is the first bombing of its kind in Taba since 3 bombings in 2004 that targeted tourist hotels and left 34 people dead. Sinai has become a hotbed for militant activity, and it has only grown since the ouster of Islamist President Mohamed Morsi in July. But so far, the attacks focused on security forces, and the attack today marks an alarming escalation that could further damage the tourism industry. Leila Falden, NPR News, Cairo.
2 missing skiers who got caught in an avalanche southwest of Denver yesterday have been found dead. Officials say 3 other skiers were injured.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to shift the conversation now to something that's not really getting a lot of coverage in the news, but I want to talk about it here because I think it's important that we cover especially some of the initiatives coming out of the White House, because I think they have an impact. And as we mentioned earlier, that it is important for us to get involved early and often in the political process, as well as whatever is going on in our community and things that impact our society. And so there's an initiative, and I want to read this report coming out of TV One from D.L. Chandler. It reads, President Barack Obama has been aggressively pushing an agenda that strengthens the core of the nation via education, job creation, and supporting middle-class families. Now the administration will turn its aim to improve the lives of young men of color via an initiative entitled My Brother's Keeper. My Brother's Keeper initiative would partner government with businesses to make sure that every young man of color is willing to work hard and lift himself up as an opportunity to get ahead and reach his full potential. Now, CNN wrote, the plan, which the White House official said, was focused on implementing strategies that are proven to get results. We'll convene business and foundation leaders to test strategies in various cities around the country designed to intervene at key moments in young men's lives, including at school and interaction with the law. Now, this is important because, Jima, you were previously the director of Youth Services Center in Colorado, and prior to that, prior to your sabbatical, you were one of the premier consultants with Missouri Youth Services Center, which was given an award by the Harvard Kennedy School as Innovations in American Government Award winner. And in fact, in a report out of Cambridge, Massachusetts, where Harvard is located, the Ash Institute for Democratic Governance and Innovation at Harvard Kennedy School today, they announced that Missouri Division of Youth Services as the winner of the Annie Casey's Innovations Award in Children and Family System Reform. The Division of Youth Services of Missouri's Department of Social Services serves youth offenders in small dormitory settings. Now, the report goes on to say, recognized as the guiding light for reform in juvenile justice by the American Youth Policy. So my question is to you, Jima, since this is really an area where you have spent a lot of time, you have a lot of expertise in, you dealt with multiple situations in this area. What other areas could the president be focusing on? And in your experience, where are the areas that could have the biggest impact with an initiative like this?
Wow, that's a packed question. And I always say that when you're dealing in our system, in our criminal justice system, what we really want to do and what we fail to do is to really provide preventive services. We do a lot once a child gets into trouble or once, something happens. Much like our previous segment, once we have a racial issue, then everybody wants to talk about race. And, once there's a school shooting, then we want to talk about school violence, And so we have to, start to do things on the front end and not be reactionary to things, but to really try to prevent. And so therein is where I think we should put a lot of energy. And it's on the preventive side. When you look at even Head Start and pre-K programs are preventive programs. They are preventing our students from going to school in kindergarten not prepared. If you're prepared when you get to school, then the chances of you staying prepared are greater than if you already come in a grade behind. You always feeling like you're playing catch-up, and eventually you're not going to want to do that anymore. So even if you look at Head Start and pre-K programs as being preventive things we can do, if you look at programs that, and I say programs, it doesn't have to be a program, but if you look at things that can be placed in the community that provide a service to children and to families, either in lower income situations or just being available, I think those sorts of things. I used to get calls all the time from parents where their child wasn't doing anything bad, but they felt like they were on the verge. And unfortunately, most of the places only deal with kids and people once they get in trouble. Once you get in trouble and you're part of the system, there's all sorts of services available to you. But to prevent you from becoming part of the system, and the sad part about it is that true prevention is cheaper than after you get in trouble and you're incarcerated and we're having to pay extra. If we treated you and dealt with you and took care of the issue that you had beforehand, then we wouldn't have to medicate you and lock you up and pay all this other stuff that we do on the back end. And so from an economic standpoint, we would be doing ourselves a greater justice if we did things on a more preventive nature.
So I think that is absolutely great that you mentioned prevention as opposed to, you know, reactive measures. I think the success that you as a consultant and the program that you was a part of was all about really therapeutic measures as opposed to punitive measures. And if you can move even before that and get to preventive measures, I think it will make the system a more holistic treatment program for children. My question, though, is what is the impetus that's making the president shift his focus in this area? Do you think that the Trayvon Martin case had any influence, or is this more of a combination of things that the president says, I need to do this specifically for African-American males, young men?
Well, I think, we could overthink it, and I think we could just say, here's a man that recognizes his own struggle, who has been very upfront with us with his own story, and knows the pitfalls that are out there for young African-American males. And yet, by the grace of God, as though he said himself, go, it could have been him. And so he knows that if you don't have a stable family life or a stable community, then you are more prone to fall prey to the ills of society. So let's try to be the bridge in those communities where they may not have all that they need to be able to navigate. And so I don't think it is, I honestly don't think this is in reaction to a particular issue as much as it is him recognizing from his own personal life. I mean, you have to take a look at the fact that you're dealing with a man whose very existence is different from any other person that's ever sat in that chair before, period. Period. There's none. He had no roadmap because nobody else there had ever looked like him, had ever had the life advantages that he had. Presidents that have come before us, and they've all come from well-to-do families, well-known families, long history of money families. And then here he comes, a man who will tell you that it wasn't long ago that he and Michelle paid off their student loans. And that is something that the most average American can understand, black, white, green, or purple. And so I think just his life experiences has been the impetus for this, and that, it had to come at the right time. And some may say it took him too long, but, as the other saying goes, it's better late than never. And the fact that he has taken this step, and this is in tandem. You got to look at this and from a historical perspective, and we don't do this enough. This is in tandem to what Eric Holder is doing over there in the Department of Justice, and what you talked about earlier in your opening about the restoring the voting rights to ex-felons, to reducing sentencing laws for nonviolent offenders, and we know that both of those are generally men of color. And so in tandem, these two things are happening, and they're happening because this is the right time to move that agenda forward. On a national level, we've leveled off on some things. And so, now I think he's just going to take a leap of faith that what he's doing will be met with not a whole lot of resistance, and that people will embrace it and do with it, hopefully, what he's going to be able to make happen. And we don't have to reinvent the wheel. I mean, there's some things already happening that if they had additional funding, they could even reach more people. So let's hope that those programs and for people that are already doing some of the things that he's talked about, they will have a mindset to continue and to grow, and they will have even more volunteers or are able to even hire some staff because of there may be some additional funding available.
You know, you mentioned Eric Holder, and we talked about him earlier today as well as before on the show. And this guy, he continues to impress me. And I think he will be remembered as one of the most profound attorney generals ever in the history of our United States, along with the president. Those two working in tandem have really moved the country forward when it comes to rights, civil liberties for Americans. You know, and so I'm really excited to for two reasons. One, to see that he did stay for a second term, and really to see to really be by President Obama's side. But we cannot overlook this journey that the president has had, and how his supporting cast, like Attorney General Eric Holder, has been there every step of the way and is really helping move the president's agenda forward. If he can't get it done out of the White House, he hands it over to the Attorney General, and you know, and so it's like a tag team, you know, back old days when you used to jump over the rope and you get a tag team. I mean, this is the way that I see these two working in tandem to really move civil liberties forward in the United States. And I'm proud to see that they are doing this. What do you think about Attorney General Eric Holder's initiatives over the last year?
Well, I think he's done an amazing job in spite of the lack of support and the attacks that have come against him unfairly and unjustly. And I think when you have a person who knows what they know and they are resolved, then you really can't shake them. And all the attacks that they tried, it's the same thing with the president, all the attacks that they've tried and they've thrown the darts and they've thrown the stuff, and nothing sticks. And you know why it doesn't stick? Because it's not true. It's not real. It's all make-believe. And so when you get down to the nitty-gritty of it all, Eric Holder, in his time as Attorney General, as you stated, will go down in history as one of the best because of how he has began to shape the conversation and how he is forcing us as a nation to deal with some of the things we've allowed to happen. You know, Clinton gets all this praise for leaving a surplus for George W., but let's not forget what some other things Clinton did, you know, with the trade agreements and with the 1990 criminal law that he put into effect that subsequently allowed juveniles to be tried as adults as young as 13. You know, all of that happened on Clinton's watch. The three strikes, you're out. A lot of these drug laws happened on Clinton's watch. And so what we're dealing with is 20 years of that and having to unpack that. So we got 20 years of data that shows you all the stuff that didn't work. So now we're going to try something different. We're going to pull back some of these things, and we're going to do it piece by piece. We're not going to throw it all at you at one time. We're going to let you see how some of these things are having an impact. And now, you know, when you're talking about ex-felon being able to vote, I mean, that's like 3.2 million people who won't have who've lost their right to vote. And that's in this great country that we call America. You know, how could that be, you know? When I've done my time and I've served my time and I haven't done anything since then, and I've been a citizen above, you know, all these things, and yet the one thing that we're all supposed to be entitled to, I don't get to have. So I applaud him for that. And I have to throw in Arne Duncan in there, the Secretary of Education, because even some of the things that he's doing, the race to the top and trying to shape some things educationally for us to get us back to being at the top of our game, especially in the science, technology, and math areas. You know, we've got to figure out, you know, how to make sure kids are learning these subjects. And what gets them prepared is to make sure that they start out prepared. And you start out prepared. And so it's all in tandem. You know, it goes back to, you know, things being aligned and things being in order. And so it may not look like it's all working together for our good, but at the end of the day, it really is. And we've got to accept that that's what it is, and we've got to embrace it, and we've got to support it. Not supporting it just because it's President Obama, or just because it's Attorney General Hogan, but because it's the right thing to do. It is the right thing to restore voting rights of people whose rights have been denied for something they did 30 years ago. That is the right thing to do.
So let's take a look at that issue. There's an article that I want to talk about here that's out of HuffPost from Washington that says, Attorney General Eric Holder is putting the weight of the Obama administration behind restoring voting rights to former felons, calling laws that disenfranchise millions of Americans unnecessary and unjust, and saying they are rooted in centuries-old conceptions of justice that were too often based on exclusion, animus, and fear. Holder was made criminal justice reform a central focus of his over the past several months, said the policies had a disparate impact on minority communities and echoed those enacted during the post-Civil War era. By perpetuating the stigma and isolation imposed on formerly incarcerated individuals, these laws increase the likelihood they will commit future crimes, Holder said during a speech at a criminal justice reform event hosted by the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights at Georgetown University Law Center on Tuesday. Now, that's an interesting perspective. He's arguing that by taking this right, you're saying that you want them to be in a perpetual state of incarceration. Because if you say to them that you've served your time, you paid your dues to society, now you can get the chance to vote, it is less likely that they will go back into that cycle because they don't want their rights taken away from them. I think that's an interesting perspective and a new one because I've not heard that argument before. What do you think?
Yeah, and also, I mean, I know people who have committed crimes, felons, and they haven't been able to vote, and it has literally, you know, been a defeating thing for them. They just feel like, you know, I haven't done anything wrong since this time. I've been out. I've done everything I was supposed to do, you know, and they've petitioned, you know, their governors and everything to restore them their rights and you know, governors haven't moved on it. And see, and that's why on a federal level, Attorney Holder is trying to move it because people on the state level, they're moving too slow. And so he recognizes that. And I agree, you know, that people will do what they can to be a part of something as opposed to not being a part of it. And I think when we allow ourselves to have, for lack of a better term, the have and the have-nots, and we create these worlds of people that can't ever come up out of something, then we're doing our country a great disservice when we do that. I think, you know, there has to be lines and boundaries and things along that nature. I understand that. But, you know, we have to be able to help a person see themselves different 20 years later than what they were 20 years ago.
You know, and I like what he said in the article about felony disenfranchisement laws date to a time when these policies were employed not to improve public safety, but purely as a punitive measure intended to stigmatize, shame, and shut out a person who has been found guilty of a crime. Mm-hmm. Such laws disenfranchise an estimated 5.8 million Americans, more than the individual population of 31 states. You know, and so that means that when we go to the polls, we don't get a true representation of our society because we got 31 states of people, worth of people out there are not being able to cast their ballot.
Exactly. And that has to change. We cannot call ourselves a democracy. We cannot call ourselves a great nation that want to go around the world and create democracy and make other people vote right, and we're not doing it here right ourselves. And this is just one of many things he's attacking as it relates to voting rights. But we cannot continue to be so hypocritical in our policies and our practices and in our laws. We can't.
Yes, indeed. So my hat's off to, again, as we stated, you know, a few weeks ago, as we were stating again today, that my hat's off to Attorney General Eric Holder. He is an amazing individual, and I think he's a valuable asset to the president, but to the American people as well. All right, it's time for another quick break. When we return, we're going to shift the focus here a little bit. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
You are listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. My mom and dad will be right back after these messages.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company's tailor-made training and consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my email.
Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to shift the focus now to sports, specifically with the Incognito v. Martin story. And I want to bring it up in the context of the release of this report. But before even the report, there was a big lead last week that obtained more than 1,000 text messages between Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito. And this is days before Special Investigator Ted Wells released his findings about the situation. And the text hinted at a relationship between the two linemen. The Dolphins suspended Incognito last year for conduct detrimental to the team following reports that he used explicit language and racial slurs in voicemail and text message to Martin. So the big controversy around this is locker room behavior. And there's an interesting perspective that was brought up for the first time that I've heard it by Reverend Al Sharpton about workplace environment. So my question, Ujima, is this normal locker room behavior, or is this an issue of the workplace environment?
Well, I think where it comes, the problem is when we try to separate the two out and just say this is the football world and this is what happens in the world of athletics. But the world of athletics is a part of the whole. It doesn't just operate by itself. So it's not like it's a whole other set of people that aren't humans living in America that are part of the athletic world. So I think once we take that away from it and just say at the end of the day, you are being paid to do a job. So that means when you go there, you are at work. You are at your workplace. In your workplace, there are certain rules, behaviors, laws that have to be followed at your place of work. So when you're there in the locker room, you are still at your place of work. Now, this is my opinion. Let me preface all of this before my athletic friends call in and jump on me. So I think you have to look at it in that perspective, is that you do get paid to do that. Whether in the professional world, the college world, you know, you don't get paid per se in terms of monetary reimbursement for your services, but they by the virtue of your athletic scholarship, some will say that's enough. And so that's still considered your place of work. So having said that, when it's considered to be your place of work, then I don't think that it should be something that is deemed as that's just what happens in the locker room. Because the construction worker could say that to the female construction worker, that's just what happens on the construction site.
Right, that's right, that's right.
Just, you know,
been,
so,
litigation around that issue, yeah.
Right, and so we have to, if it's against the law, then it has to be against the law. And it can't be against the law except if you're an athlete and you play football or basketball or whatever. You know, it has to be.
That they're also under the state and federal law. They also have to pay taxes. They also under binding contractual agreements. So they fall under the workplace federal and state law. It's just a matter of they consider themselves, in my estimation, above the law in that respect. So you think they're above the law, or should they have some maybe mitigating circumstances?
No, because I think if you begin to give out mitigating circumstances, then you open up the area to the gray area, and the gray area is where we find ourselves now. Either it's allowed or it's not. There's no gray area in there. Either you're going to allow people to be disrespectful and rude and nasty to one another, and I'm not just talking about, you know, just cussing somebody out. I mean, you know, people cuss and say some crazy stuff, and they play the dozens and all that. But where is the line? And if nobody ever draws the line, then nobody ever knows when they've crossed it. And so there has, I mean, at any workplace, there has to be some, you know, I know y'all be around each other a lot and y'all, you know, form relationships and y'all real cool or whatever. But when you're here, I have to say this to my staff. I know y'all hang out, y'all go out to the club, but when you come back in here to work, the kids don't need to hear about what y'all did at the club. Because it's not appropriate. And so there's a line there, and somebody has to draw the line, and that's a management issue. There was a former football player, I think his name was Dante Stallworth, and he was on the Ed Schultz show, and he talked about management and leadership and how at the end of the day this comes down to a leadership issue. Because you look at certain teams in the league, when they've had certain things happen, how it was handled shows you whether or not it's going to have an impact on the team. At the end of the day, everybody wants to win. Everybody wants to go to the Super Bowl. Everybody, you know, wants a championship. And so everything you're doing throughout the preseason and training camp is about getting that at the end of the season. And so you've got to have the right people in place to help manage that. And so if you don't have the right people in place to help manage that, then you have what you have in Miami's locker room, which led into their season. I don't think they had a winning season this year. I think they started out okay, and then something happened. Well, this happened. And so it kind of blew up in everybody's face. And so then, you know, if you're letting that go on, what else are you letting go on? So, you know, it's just, you know, now, you know, can somebody now bring up what everybody does, performance-enhancing drugs, so it's not that big of a deal because we're in the locker room. I mean, you know, if it's illegal and we're not supposed to do it, then it's illegal and we're not supposed to do it, regardless of the circumstances.
You know, I think this is interesting, and mainly because when Missouri defensive end Michael Sam told the New York Times and ESPN that he's gay. So he's going to be entering what we're calling this workplace environment, and quite naturally, he could subject himself to, or expose himself to an environment of this sort. And so this is interesting that this Martin case comes up, and it really exposes the climate of the locker room and the culture of football. And this may not be across the board, but it's certainly being defended by a lot of football players, and it seems to be the norm in a lot of instances. And so how do you think this would have an impact on this new Missouri defensive end, Michael Sam, as he gets ready to approach the draft? Do you think it's having an impact on him?
It depends on the team, and it depends on management. You have some general managers who are speaking in silence, code and anonymously saying, it'd be too much of a distraction in the locker room. You have some players come out and say that. Had a friend of mine on Facebook who played football in college, and a couple of, played football in the pros, and he posed the question, what is it, And it wasn't, and even they admitted, well, it's not like they haven't played with somebody who they thought was gay before. Everybody kind of had their suspicions, but nobody ever asked, so it was just kind of like, we just kind of figured he was. But it didn't have any impact on what happened on the field. And so, it can't be that you have some idea that a person, manhood is tied to his level of strength. And if he's too feminine, then he can't be a football player, because this guy was the SEC Defensive Player of the Year. So obviously he's pretty tough. Everybody want to say the SEC is the step, one tier under the NFL. So
yes,
if that is the case, I mean, that's what they say, Sugar Bowl. If that's what they say, then you can't say this dude isn't tough enough to play in the NFL. So I think, at the end of the day, it comes down to whether or not management will have the strength and the tenacity and the fortitude to deal with what's real. And if you've allowed it to go on in your locker room before, you might as well go ahead on before you get that player that comes out and just go on and say, we can't do this anymore, guys. It's just not going to work. I understand y'all josh with each other. And if this ain't the place for you now, that we have a player that is openly gay, then, I'll release you out of your contract.
These
people have these strong convictions. I mean, they have these strong convictions when it's convenient. But you don't have a problem being in the locker room with a murderer or a rapist. You don't have a problem with that. But you're going to tell me you don't have a problem being in the locker room with somebody whose sexual orientation may be different from yours. You go back to the days when they didn't want black people in the locker room.
Yeah, and that's my point. I mean, you're coming into an era where you're starting to include people, and regardless of their race. I mean, we're really starting to include. Let me say it in this way: we're really starting to live up to the ideals of America, right? By including everybody, and everything that we do, and it makes the environment a more productive workplace, a more safe workplace. And when you open up these avenues and have people can make their choices based on their performance as opposed to their sexual orientation or their religion or their color or any of those, their economic status, then it becomes a place where everybody feels welcome. And then I think you can get the most out of your people when you have an environment like that. And so that's why I think this is a workplace environment, not necessarily just a locker room environment.
Right, and I agree with that. And I think if we can, and being able to work next to you does not say I agree with what you do. That just means that, and I think people have to know the difference between the two. And I think, those that want to be all up on the other side of the religious spectrum about it have to know that we are governed by laws and democracy and not theocracy. And so, there was a reason why there was such a separation. And so my beliefs and how, what my personal spiritual beliefs are should not infringe upon what your beliefs are. And they should not make you feel uncomfortable. And they should not allow me to feel like it's okay to discriminate against you because I believe something different than you. Because if we go back, it goes back to what you said. The same Bible was used to say blacks were not worthy of anything. The same Bible was used to keep black people in slavery. So we got to be real careful about this.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So what do you think that, what do you think about the management's approach to these locker rooms? Isn't the culture created by the leadership? It comes down from the top, right? If you're going to have an environment that's conducive for inclusion, then you won't have that type of behavior. But if you're going to have an environment that can pretty much just treat people in kind of an abusive nature, people are going to live up to that because the leadership creates the culture that allows that to go on.
I agree, and I believe that's what the former player Dante Stallworth was saying, is that leadership would play a part. And he said, we have to be honest, every team is not ready for this. So let's not play like we're going to flip the switch and everybody's going to be joining hands and singing Kumbaya, because they're not. You know, every team management is not, whether it's the coach or whether it's the trainers that's in the locker room, somebody has to be the voice of reason and the voice of balance. And until you get, it starts at the top. And the top has to be able to recognize where their own areas of deficiency are and find somebody that can fill in that gap for them. And so if that doesn't happen, then, you know, the team that he will go to, you will know, because those teams have winning records. If there's conflict in the locker room, it does not affect their play on the field because there's leadership in that locker room. And when you have leadership in place and you have people that know what their roles are and they follow what their roles are, then you don't get messed out on the field, and we don't know what's going on because they're handling it where it's supposed to be handled. So it is a leadership issue. It's a leadership from the top, and then making sure those that are in the locker room are providing the players with the leadership they need as well.
And so the second piece of that, though, is I think there's also a training piece. I think there's an enormous opportunity for people that are in the diversity inclusion space to really go to the NFL and to the and not just the NFL, but to the professional sports arena, and to begin to talk about inclusion. And inclusion beyond race, inclusion beyond religion, because those are the two things that have been met with resistance in the past. And now you're going to talk about inclusion with diverse inclusion. So, with respect to sexual orientation. So it's now, this creates an enormous opportunity for people in this space to really get ahead of it, so they can begin to start these training cycles to begin to put people to change people's mindset, because it's going to start there. Because you're not going to be able to change a person's belief system in a overnight, right? Just like you mentioned, just because you're saying it's okay, it means people are going to begin to buy into it or to agree with it. So that means that somebody has to have the foresight that says, hey, we need to get ahead of this now, and we need to have all teams that are going to be participating in this professional sports to begin to have mandatory training in this area and to begin to have dialogue, but to begin to let people open up so they can have an open and honest conversation about what it means. Because just because that person chooses to sleep with another person doesn't make them less of a person, doesn't make them less of a professional athlete, doesn't make them less than a human being. And so those mindset has to be changed, but I think it begins with at least a conversation and training. What do you think about that?
I agree with that. And I think also the other part of that is, and I don't know, maybe it's the Pollyanna in me, but it bothers me that when we have the conversation about homosexuals and gay people or whatever the term, politically correct term is, we only talk about it in terms of their sexual preference. And just like I'm more than my sexual preference, they are too. I mean, it's not like every waking moment of their life they just out having sex with any and everybody. I mean, we make it be so disgusting and nasty and gross that we lose the person that's in that. And I think that's what we've got to do the most work at, is that, you know, for the person whose lifestyle, I mean, I don't have a lot in common with a crackhead. I really don't, because I don't do crack. I don't understand that. I don't get how you can just go smoke up your whole check and know you got kids at home that's starving and ain't got no food and cold. I don't know how you can do that. But that doesn't mean that I don't ever want to have nothing to do with a crackhead. You know what I mean? I'm just not going to throw them out because I don't get it. Or that's not something I believe in, or that's not something I agree with. And so I think because I would hope that there's more to that person than just that. You know, we are that person when they step into the locker room will be who they are based on the position that they're playing. If he's a defensive end, whatever his position is, he still has to perform on the field. If he doesn't perform, his performance is what's going to cost him not to have a job. It should not be what his sexual orientation is. And this goes back to something you stated and what Roland Martin was saying when we talk about the first, and we always want to go back to Jackie Robinson. You know, Jackie Robinson came into the league, to the major league, as the first one. But had he not performed on the field, he would have been the last one for a while. So he still had to perform. He didn't get any passes because he was the first one. And so as Michael Sam gets ready to be drafted into the NFL, he's not going to get any passes either. He still has to perform. Nobody's going to, you know, just make it easy for you because of your plight or you're the first one. You still got to go out there and perform. And so I think if we put things in the category that they belong in and recognize that people are more than just, you know, what you first. And I think I said in the beginning segment about, you see me and you see a black female, but I'm more than just a black female. You see him, and now all of a sudden you're going to see he's a gay athlete. Well, he's more than that, you know. And so and accepting that he's more than that doesn't negate how you feel about his lifestyle. It doesn't have an impact on you. What he does should not have an impact on you because that's not what you do. You're not going to see me hanging out at a gay club because I'm not gay. So I'm not going to be impacted by that. So I think we just get all muddled with stuff and we make it be more than what it is. And so we have to, you know how to still treat people with dignity and respect and to treat people the way we want to be treated. I don't want you to mistreat me because of the color of my skin, because of my gender, because of my physical makeup. I don't want to be mistreated, period. So if I don't want to be mistreated, then the first thing I have to do is not mistreat.
Yeah, again, I'm going to go back to the comment that I made earlier about, you know, we're taking strides to be in this ideal country. This ideal place where people want to come and people want to, you know, enjoy our democracy. But we have a long way to go. You know, I mentioned at the top of the show that, you know, this place is beginning to look unfamiliar to me. You know, I mentioned, you know, the math and science scores. I mentioned, you know, how a person would go out and take a stab at the Urban League and try to tear it down, healthcare, as opposed to building it up. The legislators that are making efforts to change our voter ID laws, akin to the Black Codes and Jim Crow. And when we look at our criminal justice systems in the wake of the killings of the two unarmed black men and Trayvon Martin and Jordan Davis. And when you look at the fact that we have an economic system that's one-sided in our country, we have a long way to go, but I think we are taking these small steps towards that more perfect union. But we still have a long way to go. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk a little bit about basketball now. We kind of beat up football for a while. I'm going to talk about basketball, specifically around the NBA All-Star Weekend. I want to know how in the world did Charles Barkley get to interview the President of the United States? How did that happen? You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and AskSteamer, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy, and I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my
stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Patrick Cook. Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So, Jimmy, we're getting ready to wrap up here shortly. But before we go, I want to talk about Charles Barkley. How in the world did he get an interview with the President of the United States?
I don't know, but I'm looking forward to it. I think it comes on at the top of the hour on TNT. And so I'm actually looking forward to seeing what questions Charles Barkley had to ask. I'm sure they were probably mostly sports-related, since that is his world, and so I can't fault him for that. We know the president is an avid sports fan. We've been knowing that since the beginning. We know he loves basketball. So it should be an interesting, you know, a conversation. I saw a snippet of it yesterday, and I think, you know, it should be interesting. But how Charles Barkley got it is, who knows? But, you know, it should rival, you know, those that had problems with the president talking to Bill O'Reilly tonight, Super Bowl. Although he's done that for the last 3 years, he's talked to whatever the network is that is hosting the Super Bowl. So that wasn't any brand new information. But because we have such a short-term memory, we forget stuff. But yeah. I'm just looking forward to it because I know Charles is who he is and all of his glory. So this should be interesting.
You know, so there are some reports, though, shifting to the NBA All-Star game, that the viewership have been lower in the past couple of years. What do you think is the cause of that?
Because you don't know what channel nothing is on. I think when it was all on TNT, you got it all. You knew where you were going to watch. You knew your whole weekend was on TNT. But now they have stuff on TNT, and then they have stuff on ESPN, and then there's stuff on NBA TV. And you might not have access to all those cable channels. I don't know. And so I think that has something to do with it. I mean, I think it needs to go back to being – I think it needs to go to being on regular television. non-cable channel maybe, so that more people would have access to it. And I think that has a lot to do with it. I think changing, and then you don't know what time things are. I mean, Saturday night used to just be about the, you know, the three-point shoot around, the skill shooting, whatever, and the slam dunk. Now you got the celebrity game is on Friday night, and then this other kind of game, and then they just brought in the D-League of the NBA, and they got a game where they play against each other. And so I just think sometimes you can do too much, and because you're doing so much, people don't really know, you know, if they, what time they stuff come on and what channel. If TNT is the host, then everything needs to be on TNT. Like Friday night, ESPN did the celebrity game. Well, that, you know, or no, the rookie, what is some game they did on ESPN, but, you know, because they both shared the NBA schedule, so I'm pretty sure that's why they did it like that, but that's confusing to the average person.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with you there. So we're approaching our final thoughts here. What do you have for the listening audience today?
Well, I think we had a great show today. We covered a lot of topics. We talked a lot about things that I know people talk about in the barbershops and the beauty parlors and when they're sitting around at the book club meetings and different places that they have gatherings. And so I think, you know, I hope we were able to provide a different insight into a topic that might spur some conversation throughout the week. As I always say, you know, this is election season for a lot of different states. And I implore you to find out what's happening in your area, whether it's a mayor election or a city council, school board issue. You know, we're dealing with some things here in the Garland ISD with our superintendent that people are taking some notice of. And so, you know, being aware and trying to stay on the front end of conflict as opposed to always being reactionary. I say stay rooted and grounded in what you know to be true. We have a lot of things that are going to come at us at once now with the Jordan Davis trial and the verdict from that. You know, where do we go from here? And just be ready. Be ready to move. You know, be ready to mobilize. Be ready to march and hold up a sign and be a voice for Jordan, who would have been 19 today had he not been gunned down in the car there at the gas station. And so we have to take a look at all these things. And what are you doing in your community to make your community a better community? And if we all do that, you know, Scripture talks about us being servants. And I often say that if we are all serving, then we will all be served. And so that in itself is how I try to live my life, to be a servant to someone outside of myself. And so I just hope and pray that something was said today that sparked something. And I'm getting ready for the All-Star game and see if the East is going to be able to hold off the West.
Yeah, all right, then. Well, that's our show for today. I would like to give a special thanks to Reverend Darrell for joining us today. And thanks to all the listeners for tuning in. A special thanks to my co-host, the wonderful, the beautiful, the magnificent, Jima Hill Cook. Now, you can follow her on Twitter. And that's at Ask Jima. That's AskJEMA. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at tailormadetalkradio.blogspot.com. That's TAILORMADE talkradio.blogspot.com. Until next time, remember it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer. Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.